I thought I'd tell you the story this afternoon about the Meta suitor and how the Meta practice came into being. Does anyone not know? I might not need to tell the story. If you know how the Meta practice, okay, I need to tell the story. So the Buddha had left some of his disciples in this grove, and they were supposed to stay there and practice and meditate, and he went off someplace else. Well, when they first started, everything was wonderful. Although they just loved being in that place in the forest, and everything seemed so perfect, so inviting. Then after a while, something started happening. And at first, nobody said anything to anybody else about, you know, I guess maybe this is my own mind. I just like feel a little bit creepy here, or I don't feel safe, or there's something going on. But from all outward appearances, nothing going on. So finally, one disciple asked another, you know, is anything going on with you? And he was like, yeah. You know, and then they started talking amongst each other, and they found out the same thing was going on with everyone. And they said, there's spirits in these woods. We got to leave here. And so that's what they did. And they went back and they traveled to where the Buddha was. And he said, you know, there's evil spirits in that grove. We can't stay there. Buddha said, you have to go back. He said, and on your way back, this is what I want you to say. May all beings everywhere, those with two legs, four legs, 100 legs, no legs, may they be well and happy and peaceful. And then he just gave them this recitation, and he told them they had to go back. And so they were reciting all the way back. When they got back to the woods, they found that the very thing that they thought was evil and that was scaring them had completely transformed. And the lesson that the Buddha was giving them was, it is by the power of your own mind, that you consider what is evil and what is good. And as they begin to develop loving kindness for whatever beings there were in the grove, fine material beings, they couldn't see them, but they could feel the power of them. That's true whether they're form beings like us, whether they're fine material beings, whether they're human or whether they're non-human. He said, whatever kind of being whatsoever. You know, the thing is we call a car because that's what we decided to name it. We call gods because that's what we decided to name that particular classification of being. And Buddha never said there was no God. What he said is, there is a classification of beings, you call them gods, but you know, you don't have to worship them. They're just a classification, just like we're a classification of human. You know, I have three cats, and you know, those cats probably think I'm a god. They food miraculously turns up in their bowl when they're hungry. I know when they're sick. I take them to the vet. They have divine transportation because they don't know what is car. You know, so they think, but you know, but it's not that I have anything out of the ordinary. These are just the capacities and the abilities I have as a human being versus maybe the ones they have as a cat, having figured out how to use paws to open a can, something like that. And so it's the same thing. Every classification of being has its own set of qualities and abilities. And so we don't have to go into unbelief modes about there being anything grander than the human, you know, because there are many things in the universe says. There are many things in the different realms of existence. And we don't have to really get into all of that, but just know that there is. And there's many influences. And some of them are good and some of them are not good. But in our sensitivity, some of us can recognize and detect. And so if someone's trying to tell me about something, you know, and they say, oh, well, I don't believe that. I'm like, who cares? I mean, it didn't happen to you. It's not in your frame of reference, but it is in mine. Then I operate according to what's in my frame of reference. And so when we start to talk about things that we believe or don't believe, you know, it makes for some rough territory because we all have different belief systems based on our experience. Once you have a certain experience, what you didn't believe, you might believe. Or once you have a certain experience, what you used to believe, you may no longer believe. You know, and this thing is very, very individual. But the Buddha says, don't cast it out. You can say, this thing is true based on my experience, but never say, and this only is true. And so I'm saying that so that we won't cut ourselves off to some things in the Dhamma, that we won't take it and start cherry picking. Either we can know it and verify it by our direct experience, or we just leave it alone. We don't have to discount it. We don't have to say it's not true. We can just simply say, I have not experienced that. Or as the Buddha would say, that is not known by me. He has a nice way of saying things. Yeah. And even for himself, you see, he still left the door open to know something else, to incline his mind to something until he could penetrate it and see what it is. And that's how we should be. If we're like that, we will be happy in this life, even when what we have believed is true gets turned upside down. What it will do is it'll make us stop clinging and cleaving to things, particularly views, and it leaves the doorway open for us to experience more of what there is to actually know, not for the sake of just knowing something, but for the sake of using it, you know, purposefully. So I wanted to go into the next stage of this concentration. And in the first set, we practiced applied and sustained thought. And we may have done good with the sustaining, and we may not. That's why he calls it applied and sustained. It means that whatever you can't sustain, you have to reapply. You know, so you like just keep applying, bringing your attention back to it, hitting it again and again and again. This is a short breath. This is a long breath. This is a cool breath. This is a warm breath. This is a choppy breath. This is a smooth breath. This is a coarse breath. You know, and just getting to know and identify every breath that is crossing that one spot, right? Every breath. That's crossing, getting to know every breath altogether. Then something happens. Now the mind has figured it out. Okay, she doesn't want to go all over the place. She wants to stay right here with it. I can do that. And so the mind stays there. It says, this is where I do my good job and make her happy. And so it starts looking. And then it starts feeling. It starts experiencing. And the Buddha said, in this way, the mindfulness of breathing satisfies all four foundations of mindfulness. So you don't have to go beyond it. You don't have to, he gave lots and lots, you know, over 40 different meditations. You don't have to do all 40. He said, you can do mindfulness of breathing, and it meets all the requirements. And so, after a while, that breath will become fine. In the beginning, it seems very pronounced because we're focusing attention on it. But then it starts to become fine as the body becomes tranquilized. The mind becomes still. And then something happens. We come to what he calls the absolute stilling, not stealing. Stilling, S-T-I-L-L-I-N-G, the absolute stilling of thought. And it means like you're just sitting in this equanimous state where there is nothing to do. There is nothing undone at this moment. There is total commitment to being in the present moment. No craving for the next moment or any type of accomplishment or any type of movement. Sufficient is this moment. And to know the joy and the peace of that is extraordinary. It is priceless. To talk about it, once you experience it, is almost to merge mind with it. So when we talk about things like this, everything starts to slow down and become like really, really unnecessary. But I must go on. But it feels really good. And in this space, everything is perfect because you are accepting everything for just what it is in this moment. The breath gets finer and finer. The Buddha said, of all the meditation objects, anyone that you use as an object of meditation becomes more pronounced the longer you do it. You know, whether you're using a flame or whether you're using one of the color casinos or whatever, except the breath. The more you focus on the breath, the more subtle the breath becomes, until it is as if the breath stops. And there's this sense of like suspended animation. Is just like everything is here totally alive, yet there is no movement, no necessity. Everything stops. And in this stopping, it's in this stopping that an ultimate satisfaction can be known. So our first inclination is when the breath softens to that point is we take a deep breath, so you know, like, yes, I'm still alive, you know, because almost it's feeling, and it's like the wasting away of the falling away of a sense of self, and you know, and we are addicted to a sense of self, and so we take a deep breath because we want to like revive it. But resist the urge, I ask you. Go beyond that entryway, that portal, to the other side. Don't get stuck in the entryway. And what you will find is that as you begin to bring in your focus and your attention all the way to that single point, right there, as soon as you cross that point, everything that you had left outside comes back in. And now this whole thing that you considered before as a distraction just becomes part of the meditation field. So then there is nothing then outside of the field. Ergo, there can be no distraction because nothing is outside of the field. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. Okay. So as much as you can be without experiencing. And that's not really a setup, so that you will recognize it as it's occurring. But now you're seeing it in a different way. You're understanding it in a different way. They have this story of the ox herder, you know, and it has these 10 points and he goes up to the top of the mountain, but then he comes down the other side. And it's very much like that, except when you come down the other side, you come down different. You come down transformed by the experience of meeting reality as it is. And now to talk any more about it would just be to talk. You know. But we want to go back and we want to experience. He said we should practice going in and coming out, going in and coming out, going in and coming out. So that you know, like, where it is, exactly where it is, how to just go in, come right back out, and go back in, and come right back out, until it becomes familiar terrain. You know how to go in and come out, so that when you want to go into meditation, you can just drop right in. You can just pow down. It's like a Prius. You know, Prius should give me a Prius, because I'm always promoting Prius. You know, the first time I rode in a Prius, it was a phenomenal experience for me, because we pull up to a stop sign and the car just powers down. You think it's off everything. Light turns green, you touch the gas, and it powers up and it goes. It just comes right there and powers right down. And we can be that same way. Just like that Prius. You just get there and power right down. But we get there and we're spinning wheels and we're revving. And, you know, but just get right there, power right down. Sometimes you forget that you can do that, like I did on the plane. But quickly coming back to oneself, you know, and then you don't even see it as a failure. You see it as a caution. You see what I mean? Like, watch out for that. Crafty is the ego, you know? Don't have to beat yourself over. Just watch out for that. See, and the only thing that has changed, the action is the same. But it's the way I'm understanding what just happened. You see? And so our changes can be so subtle that we'll miss the progress we're making if we're not careful, if we're not looking intently. If not really checking our motive, you know, whether we really want to help somebody, or is it our way of exacting retribution in a way that you don't recognize that I'm doing that to you. You know, it's a, we get to know ourselves all together. And unlike me, you don't have to tell everything, you know. You don't have to go and confess it to anybody. You don't have to tell. You just notice and take care of it. Yeah, like that. I just tell you so that you can know how to be discriminating around your own motivations. Okay, so we're getting ready to go back in now. And this time we're going to go in for a short period of time. So you have no time to lose. That means you've got to get right there with it, okay? And I'm not going to direct you this time. I'd like for you to direct yourself. Breathing in, tranquilizing body formations, breathing out, gladdening the mind. He pointed it out specifically how important it is. So I like to think of that little smile that's not really a smile. You know, you just think smile. You don't have to actually smile.